magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends, Eli, Jared, and Mike most of the time. Mike, come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what is up, and welcome to the Touch Arcade Show, episode number 417.
The season finale,
which we will do probably nothing of note, nothing special whatsoever.
I could save my my story of speaking at our local city council for then. On the subject
is it like a legalized weed speaking?
Yeah, so just real quick, because I don't want to get into the weeds of local politics because I could be here all day. But basically what is happening is Illinois legalized recreational marijuana as of the 1st of 2020. And like all these with like insanely high taxes, like what I think is borderline maybe too high, but I guess you kind of do want to push that envelope as far as it can go when you're doing something like this. Yeah. Because I guess liquor tax is high too, so whatever. But yeah. What's happening is that these local cities can choose to like opt out of having any dispensaries like inside of the city proper. Mm-hmm. But the downside of that is by doing that, you also opt out of all the tax sharing that the state does. So like basically, if I understand it properly, and this might have changed or whatever, but like basically all the marijuana sales in Illinois, the tax goes into like one giant bucket that is then split amongst all the wherever it's going.
Okay.
So.
But if you opt out of that, you don't get your slice of the bucket.
Yeah. If you opt out, you get nothing from anyone. Okay. There's a hearing in a couple days, that I'm going to go to basically cause like, I don't really care, but you do drugs, you want to do drugs, whatever. But like, it just seems like the city I live in is surrounded by all these cities that, opted out. Yeah. And I'm just like, guys, we are in like prime position to just have like unbelievable tax revenue from all these people. Because like there's a city near us, for instance, where you can't buy alcohol on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So what do the people that live there do? They just drive 10 minutes.
Right.
It's not like they're like, oh, shit, oh, we can't drink on Sunday.
Right.
That's what the law says. Oh, well. You know, so, but yeah, that's...
Well, I guess that's good for your little city, maybe?
Because, I our taxes are so high. I'm like, God damn, like, if there's anything we do to get more tax revenue that's not juicing me, I'm 100% on board. So, whatever.
Yeah. Very interesting. I look forward to hearing how this local politics thing plays out. Hopefully it's very similar to Parks and Recreation.
I have a feeling it'll be extremely anticlimactic and no one will
care. So this is a mobile gaming podcast. We don't always talk about local politics and legalizing marijuana, although oftentimes we do.
particularly episode 420 creeping up on us.
Yeah. So, what happened this week, slightly adjacent to mobile gaming, was that iOS 13 came out and brought with it like Apple Arcade and a bunch of other cool stuff that we'll talk about. But also, a weird jailbreak thing was released.
Yeah. So, well, but also, I feel like we should talk about a week of using the new iPhone. Because last week's episode, we were we recorded a little early. And also we're like, oh, man, these like episodes where we record like the day the iPhone comes is basically like, yep, it came out of the box. So it's a phone. It works.
I've touched it for 15 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. So you got the regular one, right? I got the, the Max or Plus or whatever the big one is now.
Extra large. Yeah.
And like, I really like it so far.
Yeah.
Like the bigger size, much like we were talking last week, I think, or maybe the week before, like, it was such a shock going from the 5 to the 6 Plus that I think like that's why I just hated it, because it was like I went from a phone that was small to one that was like almost twice as big and it was just like a complete like what do I even do with this thing? Whereas like and you know like when even when you got like the iPhone 6 and you went back to the iPhone 5, it was like, wow, this is tiny. Like, how did I ever use this before?
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, but going between like iPhone 10 and the 11 Pro Plus Maximum.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, yeah, this one obviously is bigger, but it's not like a massive, huge, God, what did I do difference.
Right.
And when I was like transferring shit off my old iPhone, like that didn't give me the sensation of like, oh my God, this, how'd I ever use this super tiny thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I've known, like, I never, I don't think I've ever held an iPhone XR in my hands, right? I've only had a regular iPhone X, and I don't even think I've held one of the Max models of those or whatever. But I knew that, like, the regular Pro is slightly smaller than the regular 11, and then the 11 Max is, like, the big one, right? Mm-hmm. So there's three sizes. And so I got Pam a regular 11, and then I got the regular Pro, and then she was moving from a 7 Plus, so a big size phone.
Yeah.
And, like, the size difference between those three is so small, it almost feels like pointless to have those three different sizes, because they're very not that different from each other. I actually have, so I have a Plus phone, and then I have my regular 11, and like, I don't know if you can even really tell.
Yeah, it's like,
yeah, it's like barely bigger, a little bit bigger, but not that much. And then my phone compared to her new 11 is barely different.
Yeah.
So like, I almost like, now seeing all three of these sizes in person and comparing them and stuff like that, I was almost like, man, I kind of wish I would have got the Max, because I do kind of miss having that slightly larger screen or whatever. But like, really, this compared to that is so similar, it doesn't even matter. And then she was moving from the Plus, and she's not like crazy about the Plus size. The 11 is similar, but it is smaller. But then I got her one of the clear cases too, and those clear cases are kind of bulky.
Yeah.
And so now with the case on it, it's almost just barely not Plus size.
Yeah. I have the clear case right now, and it's like, I don't know. Like, I'm thinking,
thick.
I'm thinking of returning it for a leather one, because like, it's thick. Like, it feels like a good case. Like, it feels like I could totally like drop this thing and it would be fine.
It feels protective for sure.
Which I guess is cool, but like, what I don't like about it is it's like, it feels like it makes the phone like slipperier somehow.
Yeah.
Which,
well, I actually think, so the Pros have like the matte finish on the back, and then the regular 11 has the shiny, you know? The shiny, the 11, I feel like is less slippery than the matte. Hmm. Like the matte, I immediately was like, yeah, it's textured, but it feels slipperier to me.
Yeah. But like, I don't know, the clear case, like, I feel like I'm not a extraordinarily greasy person or anything, so I don't know, but like, it's it just feels like it picks up oil for my hands, and then like this slippery case is like already slippery, and then like you add in like hand oil, and it's just like, I don't know, it's weird. Whereas like, I feel like the leather case like always had a really good hand feel, and like was like grippy without being like obnoxious, and it's only like a $10 or $20 difference, so
yeah,
I don't know.
So I don't know. I'm kind of like, I'm sort of, it sort of bugs me now that there's three different sizes of iPhone that are all not really that different. I mean, the Max size is bigger, and so if you don't want that, whatever. But like the regular 11 and the regular 11 Pro are kind of too similar for me to be like, why do these exist? I feel like there's definitely a spot for like an SE size phone that a lot of people want to be in there. And then the middle size can kind of combine the regular 11 and regular Pro or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the 11 exists exclusively for that lower price point, for the people that are just like, I don't know, whatever the cheap phone is, that's the one I want.
And I will say that I'm jealous of, I got Pam the green one, and I'm jealous of the colors, the color options. Yeah. Although I don't think there's really,
I got the green.
I mean, I would have probably chose the black one this round, because it's like a really deep black. And the space gray of the Pro is very gray. But I kind of wish I would have chose the midnight green one now, just to have something different, or even the silver. But the colors really, like, I don't know. Thinking about a $300 cheaper phone, like, I don't know if I'm as jazzed as I am about having a Pro now. You know what I mean?
That's interesting. Yeah, it's weird, because, like, the differences between the 11 and the 11 Pro, like in day-to-day use, is probably kind of irrelevant. I mean, like, yeah, the screen of the Pro, I guess, is better. You know, you get the zoom lens on the camera and stuff, which is useful. I mean, I use that a lot.
I do love the OLED screen. I think it'd be hard to go back to an LCD.
Yeah. Well, so like, does the regular phone that Pam has, does it wake when you tap it, when you just tap the screen? Oh, it does. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It acts exactly the same.
Interesting. Because that was, I remember that was like the big deal of like the OLED, was that you could just tap it to turn it on, right?
Yeah, no, that works. That works with the regular 11 too.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I've been super duper impressed with the cameras of the Pro, though, which I guess are mostly the same on the 11. But like,
night mode. I do think it'll be nice to have a telephoto lens, like a normal close up lens and stuff like that. And there will be times when I'm like, phew, I'm glad I have this third camera. But I don't know. I'm sort of at the point where it feels like Apple should just make one phone with all the best stuff in three sizes. Because it doesn't really feel to me that the regular 11 is $300 worth, you know, better than a Pro or less than a Pro.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a strange thing. Like when these phones are all so good that like even like the worst one, I guess, of this year is still like really, really good.
But if you're going to recommend a phone to somebody, you'd probably recommend the 11 unless they're really crazy about taking photos.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's crazy too, because like, if you are just recommending a phone to someone, honestly, you could just be like, I don't know how much you want to spend, because you can just buy any of the last 3 years worth of iPhones, and
that's true too. You can totally get a 10R,
or just a 10. I mean, like,
now, iPhone 8s are still on the table, so
yeah,
kind of crazy. But yeah, it's funny though too, because like you think of, we say this all the time, but when you're in like the tech world and you're covering this stuff all the time and you're super into it or whatever, you have a very different idea of these things than like your average person who, like, my sister went bananas because there's a purple iPhone. Probably wouldn't have got a new iPhone if it wasn't a purple one. And then same with Pam. She's always been happy just having the hand-me-down phone for me and doesn't really care one way or the other. But then there was a green one and she's like, ooh, green. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that like prompted her to be like, ooh, it'd be cool to get one. So it's like, that's more like, I think how people think is like, ooh, look at what color it is. And then the details don't really matter to them.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, to your average person that doesn't follow all this shit, like an iPhone is effectively an iPhone to them. Like, I mean, you know, it's still, I like hassling my friends that are still rocking like an iPhone 6 or whatever, just because it's like so old now. But I mean, like, really, for them, it works fine. Yeah. Like, if you're not into computer stuff or phone stuff or whatever, and like you use your phone for like calls, Facebook and iMessage.
Yeah.
I mean, there's absolutely no reason to get anything other than like maybe a new battery.
Yeah. You know? My buddy, who was a very smartphone resistant for a very long time, finally broke down and got a 5. This is like 4 years ago or something like that. He got an iPhone 5 and then rocked that for a long time. And it was like he even bought like a glass replacement kit online and like a battery replacement kit. Like, he kept that thing going even when it wanted to die. And finally texted me the other day and he's like, yeah, I got rid of the 5. I got a 7 now. I'm like, that's rad. Like,
I mean, that's such an upgrade, though.
For you, but like, that's a big leap to him too, though. Yeah. Like, going from 5 to 7. But if he had got like a this year's iPhone, he'd probably be like, not know what to do with it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It's wild. Like, what's crazy too about these new phones is that they're like, they benchmark so fast. I mean, I mentioned that the benchmarks, which turned out to be true, are twice as fast as the 13-inch MacBook Pro that I use. But what's weird is that like, there's really nothing that you can do on your phone that really feels like it takes advantage of like any of that speed. Right. I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I guess you could say like, you know, the top end Apple Arcade games maybe, but it wasn't like, you know, using my like iPhone 10, it wasn't like, I was like, oh man, these games are running like shit. Yeah. Like, I need to upgrade to something way faster or whatever, you know, like.
I think for the most part, that sort of like really heavy computational power, it does stuff behind the scenes so you never notice it, like taking a billion photos and stitching them together like a fraction of a second or whatever. I think that's when that sort of stuff comes into play. But that's also why I think Apple's been really smart for the last few years with their own chips, having these things that are like, you know, your average day-to-day use of a phone only really spikes the CPU like occasionally for a couple of different things. And so
right.
for the most part, you're using like a really low power, low, you know, performance part of the chip. And then when it needs to, it jumps into the high performance stuff when it, you know, needs to, but it's not like constantly on that killing your battery and whatever.
Yeah. I guess it's just strange because like, in order to sell, I guess, I don't know. It's just weird because like they used to sell iPhones based on like, look how fast this one is. Like, look, it's like obviously like faster in your hands, like loading apps, switching between apps, like even like typing faster and stuff. And that was always a very good way to sell someone on getting something because it's like, oh, you have a 3G, like check this out. When I load the messages app on my 3GS, it's like three times as fast.
Yeah, and you like film the side by side comparison.
Yeah, and that to people that like don't even follow this stuff are like, oh wow, okay, yeah, that is a very big difference kind of thing. Yeah. And now it's like these modern devices, you kind of have to show people like, oh, look at like night mode. That's pretty cool, right?
Right.
But even that like doesn't feel as significant as these like very tangible like speed improvements.
Yeah.
Which is weird because like I don't know, it's just such a strange phenomenon because like, you know, I'm sure it's using the power of the processors to do like what we're talking about with like the crazy like photo analysis and everything else. But that is so obscured from like your actual use of the phone, I guess.
Yeah.
Because it's not like, you know, you went from like the iPhone 10 where you took a picture and then it like gave you like the pinwheel and was like processing and then showed you what it looked like, you know, so you don't have any frame of reference for the fact that like, oh, this new phone's doing all the shit that your old phone like wasn't able to do. Right. It's just like, oh, this takes better pictures. That's neat.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so.
Yeah. We've kind of reached that point where it's like the advancements aren't as exciting.
Yeah.
And especially the tech world takes that in a really weird way.
Yeah. It's not awful.
Everyone expects every new phone to be like this revolutionary, crazy, tons of new features sort of thing, and it's just not that way.
Yeah, I saw a lot of really weird takes surrounding that too. I don't know.
Every year.
But I mean, it's weird because like without like a very obvious way to tell like, oh, this phone is obviously better. Like, I don't know, it kind of reminds me of like that article we used to post like every single time a new iPhone came out, where it's like, oh, here's the best games to play on your iPhone 10 or whatever. That was effectively the best games to play on your iPhone 7, which was the best games to play on, you know.
Yeah, I didn't even do one of those this year. Probably should have, but I mean, it's the same games every time.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, I guess they run better, but like Infinity Blade 3 or whatever you would call like the marquee title of that list was always like, this game ran at 60 frames per second on like the fucking like iPad Air 2, you know? So it's like, I don't know, it's like diminishing returns is weird in this kind of stuff. So
it's weird.
I don't know. So you also got the new, what do you think of the new Apple Watch with the always on screen?
Well, I have a tale of woe to go with my Apple Watch, but so it was interesting because I didn't really know what they meant by always on screen until you get it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically pretty clever. I mean, you still do the raise your wrist and it brightens up and gives you the normal screen that you'd see. But when you're like, I don't know, not moving around, I guess, it sort of has like a dim version of the screen that still shows the time and stuff like that, but it's actually doing like a snapshot every I don't know how many seconds or whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't refresh very often at all.
Yeah, and so it's funny because I've changed now, but my original watch face was one of the ones that has the seconds you know hand.
Oh, I haven't tried that. I always use the Siri
and
face.
So it was very noticeable because you would look down and the seconds hand disappears when you when it goes dim or whatever, but you look down and it'll be like, okay, it's 7:25, but you'd raise your wrist and it would brighten up and it would actually be like 7:28 and you'd see the hand move a little bit. And so you're always like, wait, like it's giving you basically the right time, but it's not like the exact right time.
Really?
And that kind of
bothered
me.
I haven't noticed that, but I use a Siri face, you know, where it's just like a digital watch kind of thing that updates like once a minute or I don't even know how long it updates, but that's interesting though.
Siri just listened to everything I said and came up with it's gone now, but none of it was accurate. But so yeah, it's weird to get used to. Like once you do get used to it though, like a couple days you couldn't go back now to having the screen go off. It's too easy to glance down at your wrist and be like, oh, I see the time. And I'm actually kind of happier that I switched to the photos watch face, which is really fun. So I have like a selection of photos showing up with just the digital time. And that's been working for me, so I'm happy. But my tale of woe, so when I ordered this, I got the Milanese Loop version because I'd always wanted one of those, but they always seemed like absurdly expensive. They were like $200 or something.
Well, they got cheaper this time around, right?
Yeah, they got a lot cheaper. So, and because I have, you know, I have a bunch of other watch straps that I like, mostly the nylon sport ones or whatever. And so I was like, well, if I'm getting a new watch anyway, I'm not just going to get like a strap I already have or something like that. Let's try something new. And I've always kind of wanted the Milanese Loop. So I get it, and it's great. I like it a lot. It's very similar to the nylon sports straps that they have now, where you kind of pull it tight and it Velcros down, except in this case, it actually has a really strong magnet that holds it in place. And it's super comfortable, and I like it and whatever. However, it is metal, and so I have a habit of when I take my watch off, I'll just throw it in my pocket. And what I think happened is that the watch band folded over the screen while it was in my pocket, and now got like a bunch of scuffs and one pretty decent scratch on the screen.
Ugh.
And it's dumb because, okay, so the screen's always on, so you don't really notice it when you're looking, and especially when the screen gets bright, you don't notice it at all, but you see it in the right light and you can notice them, and it just kind of broke my heart. It's one of those things that I know it's there, and so it's going to bother me, and it's a week old, and so that's just...
Yeah, that's why I've always paid the premium for the stainless steel one, because like that has the sapphire crystal face, which doesn't scratch, versus the aluminum ones, as just has like the Gorilla Glass screen.
Well, I might have done that, but I also should just be more careful. I was just so used to having the cloth straps that it's never been an issue, and then I don't really put it in a pocket that has like keys in it or anything like that. So it's never really been an issue, but... So there, I've scratched my stupid new watch already.
I mean,
already.
I bet you could... Apple seems to be pretty good about, like, if you go in there and are like, hey, I've had this for a week and the screen's all scratched. Like, I didn't realize the stainless steel one had, like, a way better, more durable face. Like, can I just, like, pay the difference? They'd probably be like, yeah, sure, fuck it. We
don't Maybe. Care. I also am within the 14 days, so I'm like, just throw this back in its box and send it back and just get my... get a refund when they notice the scratches or not, and then, you know, down the road I'll buy a watch again.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think I'm just gonna live with it and have it be like my reminder to not be an idiot,
I guess.
But it is disappointing.
Yeah, I didn't realize when I ordered mine that you could customize it in so many different ways, you know. So I haven't done it yet, but I've been meaning to go up to the Apple store to swap the band that mine came with, because this year around, and I don't remember if maybe this was like this before, but this year, God, my fucking Siri, I don't know what I even said that made you go off, go away. I don't remember if it was like this before, but this year, like, you could get any band you want with the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
And I, or with the watch, and I didn't realize that. And I was like, I don't know, this one, I guess I like the most of these, like, bad choices.
Yeah, the selection process on the website's not the clearest. But yeah, I was always kind of surprised you couldn't do this before, where it was always like, oh, you're getting the stainless steel, you can only get these sets of bands, right, or whatever. I was always like, why, who cares? But yeah, now it is that way. You choose your case, you choose the color of case, and then you choose the band you want.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's nice.
So I'm planning on taking like the band that I kind of didn't really want, but it was just kind of the one I liked the most of all the choices I didn't like at all. Yeah. I'm just going to pay the $50 upcharge for the leather one, because I've always wanted one of those. But similar to the Milanese Loop, it was always like, before it was like $150 upcharge or something insane like that.
Yeah,
like,
it was a lot.
That seems really dumb for just a leather watch band that, like, they sell knockoffs on Amazon for like $10. And
right.
Yeah. I don't know. So that's on my to-do list for this weekend. So
I don't know. I'll think about it. Maybe I'll try the trade-in.
Now that you mentioned it, I've been fiddling around with like the different like analog watch faces, and I kind of don't like how the second hand like vanishes and reappears. Like, that's kind of...
Yeah, and the minutes hand kind of bumps up when it comes alive again, which it just was bothering me.
Yeah.
So I changed
like,
it.
The Siri face, like right now it's off, but like looking at it, like I can see my activity ring, like the current time, and like the other dumb crap that it thinks I should care about that's coming up next.
Yeah.
Which is basically exactly what I always wanted out of the Apple Watch. So
I am happy with the always on thing. I think it's worth the upgrade. I wish I didn't scratch it, but you know, whatever.
Yeah. All right. Well, should we talk about this jailbreak thing that happened?
Yeah, this is actually a different thing than I thought you were going to talk about. So you.
Oh, was there a different thing you want to talk about?
There is.
Oh, well, so what I want to talk about, this is sort of interesting because, like, it's one of those exploits that are very difficult for Apple or, I guess, hardware manufacturers to do anything about. And it reminds me a lot of the exploit of the original Switch in that, like, they discovered something in the boot ROM, which is, like, the very first thing that happens when you, like, turn on your device, and it's just kind of, like, intentionally written in a way that you can't ever modify it.
Yeah.
They found an exploit in that to allow you to, I don't know if this actually allows you to jailbreak or they just discovered the bug and were like, this will, this is the doorway that we're able to get in on everything. But this goes through the 4S through the iPhone 10.
That's wild.
Are affected by this thing that very likely Apple is not going to ever be able to patch. Yeah, because like, you know, the boot ROM is read only, so Apple can't ever patch this kind of exploit, which is, I don't know. It's interesting because like for the longest time, like what made me want to talk about this on the podcast was like, so my, I think my iPhone 6 or whatever, I never updated past what iOS 9 or whatever you could still play 32-bit games on.
Right.
And I have like a ton of old games on that and that device is just kind of like frozen in time.
Yeah,
and it always sort of sucked that like, if for instance like I ever updated that phone to iOS 11 or 10 or whatever, the newer one that you know it's not on, I can never go back down to that. But
right.
with this new exploit, working with so many devices, if you know hackers build tools for this stuff, which I would imagine they would, like it should be very simple for you to just hop in between different versions of iOS up and down as you see fit.
Right. Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool actually.
But so the opposite side of this coin though is that Apple has done so much in recent years to make there be almost no reason for you to steal an iPhone because like you need to unlock it with the actual like iCloud account and all that stuff. And I think I've seen like other like software hacks that people have figured out how to do that, but they're always like relied on like very specific hardware and versions of iOS where it was like,
right. Well,
if you, you know, have an iPhone 9 or an iPhone 8 and it's running 12.4.1, you can use this hack and get around the activation lock stuff. And, but the thing that kind of sucks about this is that, you know, just like hackers could build a utility that allows you to kind of easily downgrade and upgrade between different versions of iOS. Like, there also now exists the possibility to build a very easy tool that's just like iPhone activation unlocker.
Right.
You know, plug your iPhone in, push the button, and like let it reboot and unlock itself sort of thing.
And there's a crap ton of 10 and below iPhones out there still.
Yeah, a shitload, absolute shitload. So,
wow.
I don't know. It'll be
interesting. That's really crazy. It took so long for them to figure this out, though, too.
It makes me wonder if, like, you know, because of like how much emphasis Apple has put on like hardware and software security, it honestly wouldn't really surprise me if their eventual reaction to this is like, hey, you know, if you have one of these iPhones that's affected by this and you're concerned about it, like you can bring it in and get like a free refurb that we fixed that, you know, that we've flashed the boot ROM to not have this exploit kind of thing. Cause I don't know, it just seems potentially severe.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because, you know, it's in the United States, it's like, you know, whatever. It's not that much of a concern to me what, like, law enforcement could do with my phone. But that certainly is not the case in every area of the world where, you know, like, political dissent is not allowed and all that stuff. If someone got your phone and looked at what you're doing and didn't like it, like, you'd have serious consequences. So,
well, we're getting to that point ourselves. So,
yeah, maybe. But so what was the jailbreak news that you had?
So this was Riley Testut's
thing. Delta.
Did you see anything about this?
Yeah, AltStore.
AltStore. This is kind of wild to me. So basically, he's found a way to basically sideload apps onto iPhones, bypassing the regular App Store
it
without
is,
jailbreaking.
It is and it isn't, though. Like, it's actually, like, super duper clever.
Yeah.
Like, so this kid, I don't think we've ever met him at GDC or anything, right?
I don't think so.
But he's done all these different, like, emulators on iOS, with Delta being the probably the most popular one or best one or whatever. But, like, what's more impressive than his emulator work has been this, like, fucking, like, almost, like, decade-long cat-and-mouse game that he's played with Apple for just creating, like, different clever ways for people to easily, like, run his, you know, obviously unapproved software on devices. And that used to include, like, all these different, like, enterprise certificate shenanigans.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think he was one of the first to do that enterprise thing.
Yeah, you got some kind of, like, hacked enterprise certificate or whatever, and you could download, and that back in the day, it was GBA for iOS. That was before Delta, even. And all you had to do was, like, roll your clock back to before the certificate got revoked, and then you could just download it, and it worked, you know?
Yeah.
Which was pretty clever. So I guess, like, the way AltStore works, and I don't know too much about, like, the Xcode stuff and all this stuff, but, like, so basically, Apple has a method for you to, and the intention of this is for you to be able to kind of, like, just make, like, hobbyist stuff on your phone. Like, if you wanted to be like an iOS developer and you just want to kind of dick around, but you didn't want to pay, like, the $100 to submit anything to the App Store yet, you can compile stuff and deploy it directly to your phone.
Yeah.
With the limit of there being, like, three things that you can do that with at any one time.
Right.
Which, you know, for most people is like, okay, that's a huge hassle. I have no idea how to do that. I'm not going to fuck with that. And, you know, so it doesn't matter that this, you know, like, air quotes, like, loophole ever really existed, because, like, there was so much friction to anyone actually using it. So, like, what AltStore does is basically, like, makes that all idiot proof, more or less.
Yeah.
So it's like you have a sort of, like, App Store style experience using this like Mac and PC program this guy made to effectively like deploy these different things you're not really supposed to, that would never be able to get approved through Apple, onto your phone.
And it's funny because the caveat to all that too was that when you compiled something and put it on your device, it would expire after 7 days. And so, like, say you even did have source code to a weird emulator that you like to use, and you compiled it yourself and you used it. Every 7 days, you'd have to recompile and redeploy it to your device to keep it active. What AltStore does is, in the background, it checks before that 7 days is up and refreshes the app or whatever to make it continue working, so that as long as you have, like, internet access on your device and stuff, you should never notice and it should never expire. And I thought that was really clever, too. But I like all of his stuff. I'm just like, Apple's going to, you know, shit their pants over this sort of thing. And then how do they put a stop to it, or what do they do about it? Or I don't know. It's just strange.
Yeah, it's like, that's what's truly fascinating about this to me, is that it's like he has built this entire framework around things that Apple has made to do this exact thing, but had just made it, like, so fucking easy that now it's, like, accessible to just, like, you know, a random dummy that wants to download an emulator on their phone that doesn't know anything about computers or anything else like that.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what Apple's response to this is, because it kind of, like, I don't know. Like, the thing is, like, with you only being able to have three things on your phone at any one time, like, it does kind of, like, limit the kind of, like, potential of this, I guess.
Yeah.
But I guess it doesn't really stop you from, like, because it's all open source and stuff. Like, you could roll your own AltStore.
Also, I think the Delta emulator has, like, 10 systems on it or something like that. You know what I mean? So it's, like, it's kind of an all-in-one sort of emulation thing that you're probably not going to be worried about, you know, having more than that. But I haven't messed around with this yet. I don't know if I'm going to bother, because I just, I don't know, probably wouldn't ever use it anyway.
Well,
I mean, do think it's, like, pretty clever and interesting. And, like, on his Twitter, you can see him. He's playing, like, Mario 64 and Super Mario Kart and all this stuff. So it's, like, that's cool, I guess. I don't know.
Particularly for you, though, with, like, you having, like, 87 million different ways to play emulated games.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if you were, like, 12-year-old Jared that had, like, a hand-me-down iPhone that now could run
a
million different ROMs. Yeah, I'd be losing my shit. So I don't know. It's all pretty cool. So I guess if you are interested in this, there's altstore.io is the URL to download all the stuff. It's a free preview.
Yeah.
And it's
wild.
Yeah, pretty. I watched some YouTube videos on it. It's like extremely easy to get working. Like you basically like download this thing, sign in with your iCloud account, and it just works.
Wow.
So
crazy. But although I guess the caveat is, potentially you could download some shit that's harmful or steals your data or whatever, and you wouldn't know it. And
I mean,
all the reasons that Apple restricts this sort of thing come into play. But I know that he's not gonna do that sort of stuff.
Yeah, like I think AltStore actually might even just be limited to like his own repositories. Like I don't know if you can add like weird sources to it or not, but I mean certainly like if you just stick to the main AltStore stuff and just use it to download the Delta emulator and stuff, I feel like
I trust Riley's stuff
totally. Sure. Well, yeah, and it's so I'm talking about on Twitter, like, hey, it's all open source. Like I asked for your iCloud thing, but that's just for the Apple credentials, and like you can look in the source and see exactly where it's what it's used for and where it goes. Like I'm not bamboozling anyone with any of this, so which is pretty cool. I don't know, it's neat, so check that out if that's something you're interested in, I guess.
So we touched on this last week, but Apple Arcade came out officially and it's real good. I don't know what else to say. Have you messed with any Apple Arcade games?
A few. I don't know. The problem is like, I don't know. There's a lot of these games on Apple Arcade, particularly like the more kind of involved ones, which are kind of like the Steam port kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, I'm glad they exist, and I'm sure that people are gonna like play the shit out of them, and you know, pair their PS4 controller and stuff like that. But like, as someone that like typically has my bag with me that just like has my Switch in it and stuff,
mm-hmm.
like there's a lot of the games that I was kind of like more curious to try out in Apple Arcade, like almost seem like they would be better experiences on the Switch.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. It puts it in this weird spot because like arguably the games on Apple Arcade that are like mobile experiences are like, the less interesting part of the catalog almost.
Yeah. I think it depends. I think that they did a nice job of getting like a wide variety of stuff.
Oh, for sure.
And I think it's nice watching people talk about it while, you know, first of all, you can definitely tell that some of these games were designed to be free-to-play games, and then Apple popped in and was like, hey.
Here's a dump truck full of money.
Yeah, and so it's like playing them, it's super obvious, like, oh, okay, like this is meant to have an ad play after every session or, you know, whatever. Like I can see there's like gem stores and stuff that should have been here or whatever. Like it's transparent that there certain games were designed as free-to-play and now they aren't, which sometimes hampers how good they are and sometimes doesn't, but it's also nice seeing games like the Capybara games Grindstone, which is like very dungeon raidy sort of matching game. It's really cool seeing games like that are like you're almost expecting like the in-app purchase screen of Doom to come up on you and stuff like that, or you're expecting an ad to get thrown in your face or whatever, and when those things don't happen, it's sort of like refreshing and nice to be like, oh, I'm just playing this game. And, oh, yeah. I don't have to worry about that. The difficulty's weird because it wants me to buy and I purchase stuff or, you know, whatever. I don't have to worry about coins or ads or blah, 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 blah. Like removing all of that stuff is really nice. And so it seems like the response has been really, really positive towards Apple Arcade when originally it's kind of funny because so many people were like, nobody's going to subscribe to that. You can't get people to pay for anything on mobile, let alone $5 a month for, you know, these games or whatever. But what I didn't expect to happen is that I feel like a lot of the quote unquote real gamer crowd has been like, oh, this is so awesome. And there's a lot of really good games and like a lot of them play really well on touchscreen. A lot of them don't. A lot of them need a controller. But then again, iOS 13, it's real easy to connect a controller now. So it's like a lot of those talking points where people would talk bad about mobile, and they all were valid, even though, you know, people like you and I who dug a lot deeper below the surface would find good games always over the last 10 years. So it's not like this is new to us, but at least for those people, they're like, hey, this is like a safe haven where I know I can just play any game I want. It's not going to be filled with crap that I hate.
Right.
And that's been like pretty eye-opening for a lot of people that have dismissed mobile for all these years. So I think that's a good thing, but it's also kind of annoying because it's like, what have we busted our ass, you know, doing for
the
last year? We found a lot of great games. They've always been there. It's just you've chose to ignore them because of the stigma. So,
yeah, that's has been a extreme annoyance of mine. Basically ever since Apple Arcade has launched, is like seeing all these people, and I don't know. I'm going to throw anyone under the bus, like, you know, whatever. Yeah. But like, there definitely was this like. And, you know, anyone that follows Touch Arcade knows this, and we've talked about it for a fucking decade now. Like, there definitely always was, like, this weird, like, overarching, like, narrative of, like, and it has persisted since, like, the Java games of mobile, really, mm-hmm. in that, like, mm-hmm. all mobile games are shit. There's no point in paying attention to any of them. Like, they're all bad. And as soon as free-to-play became a thing, it was like, oh, not only are they all bad now, but they're all, like, casinos in your pocket, and they're just designed to be predatory and take your money and all this stuff, which... I mean, yeah, okay. Like, that is fair for some games. Like, there, no one will ever make the argument that there aren't shitty games on mobile.
Yeah.
But to be fair, like, you can't make that argument for any platform. Like, you could never make the... I mean, like, I would say of... As far as, like, a game library is concerned, at least of games that, like, consoles in my lifetime, I would say that, like, the PS2 for me... had the largest library of just like absolute bangers, like just good game after good. I mean, like the amount of PS2 games I had by the time that, like, because I didn't buy PS3 right away, but like the amount of PS2 games I had by the time it was like, all right, time to retire this thing and get a PS3 mm-hmm. that were like fucking amazing, like was enough to fill a bookshelf. I mean, it was insane how many great games there were. But I would never make the argument that like the PlayStation had, you know, no shit games, because of course there were. Like, that's...
Well, you don't hear that said about the Wii and the DS, which are two of the most popular systems in the world that had some of the biggest libraries of shovelware in the mm-hmm. world too. You would just be like, oh, I play the awesome games that are on those systems and I ignore all the Hannah Montana games or whatever.
Right, exactly.
And like, but you'd never be like, oh yeah, the DS library sucks. I don't even play it. I just ignore it completely.
Yeah.
No, because you want to play the good games that are there and you're willing to sort through the cruft.
Yeah,
and I mean, mobile's been the same way.
So. For like the longest time, I always kind of suspected that like the reason that you saw these people that were like writers at larger, like, you know, more mass market game sites kind of like shitting on mobile was because it was like, we put a lot of work into finding the good games. I mean, like, you, like, Apple features a lot of stuff that's good, but like if you want to find like the real, like, you know, the coveted hidden gem, like that was work to find those games. And I think it was easier for people in that position to just be like, oh yeah, all mobile's trash, because I don't want to ever like figure out, I don't want to be expected to like put the effort forth to like, you know, navigate this weird world of shovelware and stuff. And it's been kind of annoying seeing like all those same people now that like Apple has effectively like handed them the good games on a silver platter.
Yeah.
Who are now like, oh, well, what do you know? It turns out that there are good games on mobile after all. Who knew?
Yeah. Well, and we knew.
Just like, I don't know.
We've done a top 100 games list the last 3 years, and you could easily, what other system could you do a top 100 games list for and have there actually be like 100 good games?
Yeah. So I don't know. It's whatever. Like, I'm glad that people are playing mobile stuff and taking it more seriously. I mean, that's good for everyone that's interested in mobile gaming or involved in the mobile gaming ecosystem. It's just like, I don't know, just really annoying seeing like all the people that I basically unfollowed over the years because it was just like, God, all you have are bad takes on how the platform we work so hard to find good games on is just full of actual trash.
Yeah.
Now coming around and pretending like, oh man, I've loved mobile all this time. Like, I'm so glad there's good games on my phone because I love playing games on my phone. And it's like, God, dude. Like,
it is annoying. It is annoying. But hopefully it's all for the greater good. And it'll be really interesting to see if Apple, like, I was really dubious that, you know, Apple's gonna change everything. They're gonna fix premium gaming, whatever. But now I'm sort of like, oh, maybe that does happen. I mean, if everyone's attitude changes and this ends up being a good moneymaker for developers, then I don't see why this couldn't continue going on and being a thing and having good mobile games be a part of the mainstream again.
But that's kind of like the nebulous thing of both Apple Arcade and the new Google Play Pass, is that like how much developers are actually going to make long term on both things is like super nebulous. Like, no, it's just like, I don't know. Like, it's entirely, I mean, I would hate for this to be the case, but it's entirely possible that like you might make less money on Apple Arcade or less money on Google Play Pass or whatever else. So like what I'm super curious of is to see what Apple Arcade looks like a year from now. Like once, because it seems like the current lineup is like, and this is going to sound negative and I really don't mean it this way, but it's just like, The current lineup of Apple Arcade games is like Steam games that also work on mobile.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of kind of like what you were mentioning before, like stuff that obviously was free to play that got like a last minute rejigger to get rid of gems or ads or whatever else.
Right.
And then there's like this very small corner of games that are like, oh no, like this totally would have been a really good premium mobile game, with like Oceanhorn being like a very good example of that.
Right. Right.
But those seem to be in like the extreme minority of the larger Apple Arcade library right now, which, you know, is just because like someone at Apple was like given a directive being like, all right, we're launching a subscription service. It's launching with a new iPhone.
Go find 100 games.
Find 100 games. I don't care where they come from or whatever. They just need to be good looking games with no ads or in-app purchases or anything else like that.
Right.
Which like, and you know, like it's a interesting and kind of fascinating feat that Apple is able to pull that off so quickly. You know, like you can't just round up I think there's like 70 some games that are live right now. Like you can't just pick up the phone and be like, hey guys, 70 good games, let's go, without a ton of work. You know,
there's benefits to having billions of dollars to throw around.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I'm very curious how it'll work out in the long term too. And I don't know, right now I'm happy in this honeymoon phase because there's all these good games I can try. Overwhelming number. I still kind of disagree with their launch strategy of fire hosing a whole slew of games out all at the same time, because I'm seeing a lot of people be like, yeah, I tried this for 5 seconds and then moved on and then never came back to it. You know, the problem we've all had, because so many good games are coming out every week on mobile and our backlogs were getting crazy and whatever. They've kind of created that own problem for themselves, when I feel like they could have been like, here's 30 great launch titles spreading a lot of genres, and there's going to be new games every week for the next year. And, you know, that do something more along those lines would have been a lot more manageable than like, here's 70 plus games, go try them all.
Right.
But that said, it's still pretty fun to be like, oh, I'm really enjoying this game, and let me go try another one I've had my eye on or whatever. And it's kind of nice they're in their own section in the App Store, too.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
It's weird that like dumping that many games on at one time also creates like a secondary weird problem in that, like, I don't know, this is it's kind of maybe getting in the weeds here, but like something I've been thinking about a lot in a general sense with like all forms of digital entertainment, this is not specifically related to games, is that... you know, back when I guess I was a kid, and you know, other, you know, like in the 80s or 90s or, you know, earlier before then, like it seemed like you had a lot of like entertainment, like events that everyone kind of like played a part in, you know, like you could like, for instance, like the Budweiser, like Was Up ad, like when that came out, like everyone was watching network TV.
Right.
They ran it all the time. Everyone knew what it was. And like, if you said like, "Was up" to someone, like they knew exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
And everything else. But now, like, that sort of phenomenon is like so rare in entertainment stuff. Like, it seems like that happens with like Marvel movies sometimes now.
Yeah.
Like, at least with like the big ones, like adventure tier Marvel movies.
Yeah.
Some like very big Disney movies. I guess like Star Wars. and that's about it though. Like Untitled Goose Game, I feel like, is the a good example of like a lot of people all kind of like sharing the experience of one thing at a time. And like, I don't know, like one thing I would really like to kind of figure out how to emulate with Game Club is that sort of thing where it's like, all right, this is the game of the week. Like we're really focusing on this one, like trying to get a bunch of people playing it to have that kind of like shared social experience of like, oh shit. Like, did you see what happened on the Simpsons on Sunday? Oh, of course. Right. Let's, you know, which just like doesn't exist anymore, you know?
Yeah. Sean used to do the play alongs, which were really cool, where it'd be like, hey guys, we're going to play through Final Fantasy II this week. or over the next 2 weeks, or maybe it was by month, I forget. But basically, like, everyone grab the game, and then we'll start on this day, and then kind of share your adventures in the forum thread or whatever. And it kind of doesn't matter if you fall a little behind other people or get ahead of other people or whatever, but everyone's kind of enjoying that same game all at the approximate same time and talking about it. And I thought that was such a rad idea. It never got a ton of traction, but I feel like that's just sort of this day and age is, is people are like too used to having everything be on their own time schedule and their on-demand lifestyle or whatever. That you, it's harder to get stuff like that happening.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I was thinking about this too when, and maybe I started thinking about this with like Stranger Things, because like everyone lost their mind with every new season of Stranger Things, right? But it's like, if Stranger Things was a TV show like Lost or something like that, it would be like, oh my God, like let's grab drinks on Thursday and talk about Lost theories from, you know, last night's episode kind of thing. But the way that content just gets dumped out now, it's like, oh, are you watching Stranger Things? Yeah, I'm binging it. Okay, like let's meet up in a couple weeks once everyone's watched all of it and talk about the whole thing as a whole.
Yeah.
And that kind
that's kind of annoying.
It kind of feels like Apple Arcade's initial library is sort of the same way, which I don't know. I would just hate to think that like there's really good games in there that just like aren't being given like the breathing room that maybe they deserve because they're being overshadowed by like I don't know, Overland or the Capybara game, which I can never remember the name of, but is really cool. Right. Yeah.
That's sort of the case, though. Like, too much all at once, and some of the good games are getting overshadowed for sure. But also, that kind of gives Touch Arcade a reason to continue existing.
Yeah, we can find
those hidden gems of Apple Arcade, even.
I guess that is interesting. Because
a lot of people, when this was first announced, I was like, well, that sucks. I guess that's the end of Touch Arcade because we already can't review free games. Nobody cares. And there's not enough premium games and whatever. And now if you're a subscriber to Apple Arcade, you're not going to care about reading about the games you can just try anyway. But a lot of people have said, well, I either like reading about games in general or like reading about games I already like to see if you like it too or see if you don't like it or whatever. And then a lot of people have been like, my time's valuable, so if you can be like, this game's good, then I'll make a point to try it out rather than maybe I'll come across it someday in this sea of games that I have access to or whatever. So I feel like kind of highlighting good Apple Arcade games is going to be a good thing.
It's kind of sort of wild how like it seemed like Apple tried to do like Apple Arcade to like solve the problem of like good game curation, but at the same time like created this like entirely like secondary problem.
Right.
Of then like curating like the actual good games from like the other good games.
It almost feels like a redux of the original App Store launch. Remember when it launched with 500 apps or whatever? And, you know, the comment section on the Touch Arcade post about the App Store going live was all developers being like, well, great. Now I'm lost in this sea of 500 apps and nobody's going to be able to find my game. And that's really annoying. I wish Apple would have thought about that and all this stuff. And it's like they were bitching about 500 games and now we're at whatever, 300,000 apps in the App Store or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like they created that same problem over again where it's like, well, there's 100 games and mine's getting lost in the shuffle. Like I've already gotten some follow-up emails from Apple Arcade game developers that were like, hey, I know it was a busy week with the launch, but just didn't want you to forget that this game is part of Apple Arcade and this game's part. And I just thought to myself, like, is that because they're seeing like really poor, you know, player numbers or something like that on whatever, but...
Yeah, it's interesting because it makes me wonder if like the way these developers aren't getting paid out is based on like playtime or something like that. Because like
it has to be something like that because you can't have, you know, an equal slice of the pie for everybody that's part of Apple Arcade when certain games are getting played much more than other games.
Well, and then again, that kind of like raises the weird question of like if you are. I don't know. And I don't want to single out any titles. So, like, say you're like one of the games we talked about, which is like what on any other Wednesday would have been like a really cool mobile game to check out by some like indie developer that, you know, just kind of like flies under the radar, but gets picked up on Touch Arcade and like the community likes it and stuff like that. Like if you are that tier developer, like, do you do better not being in Apple Arcade? Maybe I mean, but the problem is like, does anyone like, I guess you could like, make the argument of like before like if the App Store existed before Apple Arcade, maybe you would have made more money as a premium game. But like now I just, why would you ever buy that, you know, this specific type of game I'm talking about? If it's like, I don't know, I have Apple Arcade, paid $5. I have more shit than I could ever play in a lifetime.
So I don't know. It's all fascinating and something that it's really we're not going to know what's going to happen with it until it happens. So
yeah. So I don't know.
But anyway, so in addition to Apple Arcade or iOS 13 launching last Thursday, the iPad version and the Apple TV versions also launched this past Tuesday, Monday, something like that. And so that brought Apple Arcade to iPads and Apple TV. And this was kind of cool. Like, I updated my Apple TV and was like, oh, I'm excited to check out some of these games, you know, take advantage of the whole multi-platform, cross-platform nature of mm-hmm. Apple Arcade. It's really cool. And then you go on Apple TV App Store, or the Apple Arcade Store, I guess, and lots of them require controllers, and lots of them just seem like they would suck with the Siri remote anyway. And so, like, I kind of got stopped short downloading a bunch of stuff because I didn't have a controller that works. I have an Xbox One, but it's the original one that doesn't have a Bluetooth.
So does it require you to have a controller paired in order to download a controller game?
Certain games, yeah.
Oh, really? That's actually kind of clever. So you're not, like, downloading a game being like, what the fuck? Why can't I play this?
Right. So I actually went on Amazon and bought an Xbox controller specifically for this, which, you know, I'll probably use it maybe anyway. But and so I played some games on the Apple TV, and it's fun. It's nice. It's like, I don't know, I get so used to playing Switch handheld and playing mobile games handheld and whatever, and I very rarely, it's like a pain in the ass to me to want to play on a TV anymore, because mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I got to load up the game system and then load up the game. And
which you also probably haven't used in long enough time that it requires some kind of update to even play.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. I turn my Xbox on once, like, every 6 months. So, so it's kind of cool, like, dicking around with Apple TV, because that's on my main TV in my living room, and it's just there. And, you know, if nothing's good on TV, it's cool. You can switch over and play games on the same thing that's already right there. And it's nice. I checked out a few games. Like, things like Cat Quest work perfectly, which, why shouldn't they? They're kind of, like, designed for controllers anyway, or
so
whatever.
Did you fiddle around with, like, the handoff between, like, your phone and the Apple TV at all? Because that was, like, one of the features that, like, Apple touted.
Yeah, I didn't try that. Like, you're mid-game on your phone, and then you pick it up right where you left off on the TV or whatever. No, I didn't try that. But I did the game progress transferred very seamlessly, which I thought was really nice. Between some of the games I put time in on my phone, it was nice to play it on Apple TV and be like, oh, cool. You know, like, it remembered all my save progress. That's cool. But then one of the bad experiences I had was playing that game Hot Lava. So you download it onto your Apple TV, and it fires it up, and it's like, hey, optimizing for whatever device you're on. Okay. And it turns on, and it looks like you're playing like a GBA game blown up on like a 60-inch TV.
Oh, really?
Or something like that. Like, it's so jaggy and so low res, and it's
just interesting.
I thought something was wrong, and maybe there is something wrong that it's doing that, or it's just the fact that whatever engine it's using or whatever. I mean, Apple TV is not the most powerful thing in the world, so maybe it just can't handle it, and so it just has to really, really dumb things down to get it to run right. But even then, it's choppy. And it's just not good. I mean, it's technically playable, but it's not enjoyable to play.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the games that I tried that turned out to be bad on Apple TV.
That's interesting.
But everything else seemed to play fine. Like, Oceanhorn looked great. Skate City was an interesting one because it's like, if you haven't heard of it, it's the like a side-scrolling skateboarding game, kind of a 2D sort of one. And it... on touchscreen, I've gotten really, really used to the controls on touchscreen, so I know exactly what I'm doing. And they transfer just ever so slightly different to analog sticks. And so it really screwed me up because I'm so used to the touchscreen. I actually found it harder to play with a controller.
Oh, weird.
And the other thing is it mimics the touchscreen controls, which makes sense on a touchscreen, but don't make as much sense with analog sticks. So, like, if you were playing Skate... you know, the game Skate on EA Skate, you'd like hold the analog stick down and then like flick up to do an ollie, right? Which just seems natural and makes sense or whatever. But you don't do that in Skate City because down is its own trick and up is its own trick. And so you have to, it's kind of like, have you ever played a platforming game where up is jump and you're like,
I
kind of get it, but this just feels wrong and it's not what I'm used to.
Right.
It's kind of like that. And so I've actually was sort of getting the hang of it, but I was just like, I think I'll probably just always play this on my phone because it just feels better with touchscreen. So I don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting too, but it's neat that you have the option to download all these games on your Apple TV if you want. I think it's worth grabbing a controller if you don't have one that works just for iOS 13 in general. I think it'll be handy, and you can buy a clip for it to clip your phone on. You can play it with your stand, with your iPad, play it on your Apple TV, play it on your Mac. You know, I feel like a controller is a handy thing to have, if not something that you need to feel like you need to bring it with you everywhere. But so yeah, it's cool. I feel like it's a nice benefit that this sort of thing is on Apple TV and then presumably Mac as well when the Mac launches next month, I guess.
That's cool. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I'm really curious what it's going to be like on the Mac because I feel like there's going to be some of these games here are going to be like really excel with keyboard and mouse.
Yeah. And it also makes me wonder or sort of tempted to want to go back and retry some of my other favorite just regular mobile games on Apple TV now that I have a controller too. Because I feel like they botched the launch of that thing so much that my enthusiasm never came back. When the App Store first launched on Apple TV, it was like, this is going to be awesome. I'm going to play so many
Well,
games, but everything used a Siri remote and it was stupid.
the other thing that's kind of weird is like they have done a very bad job at like pointing out like which Apple TV you should get if you're into like Apple Arcade stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like it's I don't know, like they've somewhat intentionally made it so it's just like you just go to the store and are like, "Oh, I want Apple TV." "Oh, do you have a 4K TV?" "Okay, here, this is the one for 4K." "Oh, you don't? All right, here, this is the non-4K one."
Right,
Kind
right,
of thing,
right.
you know, where it was like I could see that causing problems if you're just like, "Oh, I have Apple Arcade for my kids. Like, let me go to the store and get them an Apple TV. Oh, this one's $50 cheaper. I'll just get this one." Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And then you
Yeah.
get it and it like won't play some of the games like you're talking about. Whereas like the new one has the faster processor and stuff. Like, I don't know, it seems weird that they haven't done like a Apple Arcade Apple TV edition that comes with a controller or
I
something like
would be
that,
shocked if they didn't do something like that. I feel like it would make a lot of sense. And when I went and I didn't have my new iPhone shipped to me, I went and picked it up in the store. And you know, they always kind of redesign all of the advertising and stuff in the stores on the iPhone launch day or whatever. They had a huge game controller section and all this other stuff, basically a gaming section, which also mentioned Apple Arcade. And so it seems like it's like a thing they want to point to. And I feel like if you went into an Apple store and they're promoting gaming so much, you'd also be like, buy this Apple TV with a controller bundled or whatever. So I don't know.
Yeah, I just like I don't know. I think we mentioned this in the past. Like, I just really hope that they like I'm super excited by Apple's whole like, "Oh, we're super into gaming now" thing. But there's so much of this that reminds me of like when Metal was new. And remember, they're like, "All right, guys, like this is it. Like we got low-level processor access, so you can make the absolute best games ever on iOS and Mac. So strap in, because this is a new frontier of gaming." And then it was just kind of
Bye
like,
bye Xbox and PlayStation.
yeah. And then it was just kind of like, "Oh yeah, this free-to-play game uses Metal, I guess." So I don't know. I hope they stick with it. So. But man, we are running really long. Do you want to talk about Mario Kart?
Let's skip to Mario Kart because that's kind of a big deal launch today
Oops, sure.
or this week. Did you play this at all?
I fiddled with a little bit. I don't know. Like this is another really good example of what I was talking about with the Apple Arcade games, where it's like I have real Mario Kart on my Switch.
Why would you
So
bother playing?
why would I fiddle with this one?
It's been interesting watching the coverage at large of this game too, because a lot of cynicism because it's a free-to-play game and it has a optional subscription thing too, which I think is garbage and I would never subscribe to, but that's just me. And then, you know, so there's like been a lot of hatred about, you know, this crappy Mario Kart game or whatever, but then it comes out and it's like been downloaded a bazillion times and is number one grossing game and
Like we were talking earlier today about how silly it is how like none of the analytics places like agree on any sense with regards to like how many times this game's been downloaded. Like the spread is like one place said, "Oh, it's been downloaded 10 million times." The other place says it's been downloaded 20 million times. Like how do you have a 10 million margin of error.
Or maybe it's zero. Yeah. 10 million margin of error. Could be just zero.
That is insane.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. But it's definitely like goes to show, too, that people in our sphere don't totally know what's going on. Because I'm sure your average person is like, because the game, first of all, it looks good. The graphics are really good. It's very Mario Kart. It's got all the right sounds, all the right characters, bright, shiny colors. It runs reasonably well. It's a very polished app, I would say. And so your average person that's like, this is so awesome, I got Mario Kart on my phone, doesn't really care about all the other stuff that people are complaining mm-hmm. about, you know what I mean? So I don't know. But then playing it as somebody who loves Mario Kart and, you know, it's designed to be played with one hand and controlled with one thumb and all this stuff, I just can't. I can't wrap my head around it. Yeah. It doesn't, I don't feel comfortable playing it, and I just want to jump and go play it on the Switch instead where I'm comfortable.
Right.
But I'm trying to warm up to it. I'm trying to give it a fair shake. I think one of the best designed parts about this app is the gacha system where you shoot an item out of a pipe. So like in free-to-play games, unlocking a new treasure chest or a gacha item or whatever, is always this big, elaborate, like, animation or whatever that's like, oh, ha-ha, here you go, you want a shard or something or whatever. And this one, you actually pull down and launch an item out of a pipe, and it's very satisfying. And so, yeah, I thought that was just a funny thing that they did really well. But I don't know. Like, I don't know. I feel compelled to keep playing because I'm making progress and I'm unlocking new tracks and stuff and I'm getting new items and whatever. So there's like a nice, there's a compulsion loop there, but I also feel like bored with it. Mm-hmm. And if you bump up the difficulty, I feel like the controls can't hang with me because, you know, seemingly for no reason at all, I'm careening off into the sides of the track sometimes when I'm like, what am I doing wrong? Like this one thumb controlling thing is not working for me.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'll stick with it or not, but I also don't think it's as bad as it could be, but it's also pales in comparison to a real Mario Kart. So yeah. I don't know.
This to me is like the perfect kind of game that like, that people just need to realize there's like two distinctly different demographics that would be interested in this and the real version of Mario Kart. And like, there's very little crossover there. And like, if you're just like some random weirdo that like remembers playing Mario Kart on like the Nintendo 64 in college or whatever, and this is a free version on your phone that you can fiddle around with for a minute or two at a time, like you'll probably be happy as a clam. If you're the kind of person that's like, the kind of dude that can do like the power drifting down a straightaway, so you're just like constantly boosting and all the other insane shit you can do in Mario Kart, like you're gonna hate this, and that's fine. Like you don't need to play it. And I don't know,
maybe. I mean, it's also this isn't meant to replace any proper Mario Kart game either. Mm-hmm. So it's like you can enjoy your Mario Kart 8 on your Switch and play this occasionally too and enjoy them both. I don't know. I think it's fine. I think it's a pretty overblown kind of the hate towards this.
Well,
but I also don't think it's an especially great game.
I think, a friends of mine that are super duper into Mario Kart, they hate this because they're like those kind of people that I was talking about that can do the fucking boost in a straight line. Like whole thing was like, I'm not mad that this exists. I'm just mad that like Nintendo hasn't released a new Mario Kart since 2014.
Right.
And I mean, I guess like, you know, the refresh on the Switch or whatever kind of sort of counts because a little bit new content, but like, it just bugs people that it's been like 5 years since there's been a new version of this game that they love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think people also realize like, obviously different teams are making these games, right? It's not like the Mario Kart 8 people were like, oh, nope, you got to finish this mobile game first before you can make the Switch game, right? But it's nevertheless, it's annoying. I understand why it's annoying, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I also think Nintendo, being Nintendo, there's a longer span in between their kind of tentpole franchises like that. And so 5 years since a Mario Kart game, like, that's not that crazy. Sometimes there's only one Mario game on a console system's lifetime. So, like, you know, I think them being able to re-release the Wii U Mario Kart bought them a lot of time to where they can be like, you know, who knows? I guarantee there's a Mario Kart in development at Nintendo right now, a brand new one.
Yeah, I mean,
there's no way there's not. It's just a matter of when they feel like it's ready, mm-hmm. and they're not going to rush it for any reason, because there's no reason to. Mario Kart 8 still sells well, and everyone still plays it right now. So
yeah, no, I know. It's the same thing that annoyed people about the Animal Crossing mobile version, where it's like, dude, like, please make a real Animal Crossing. I've been waiting for years for one.
Yeah.
And instead, you're releasing this like free to play game. Like, I don't know. Right.
Yeah.
I can
get that too.
A weird situation. So,
but you can't ignore it.
What else you want to hit on here?
Why don't you hop over to this Apple Arcade review, because I just wanted to highlight the fact that we're doing Apple Arcade reviews now. I just kind of picked this one at random, but brought in some new writers specifically to do some Apple Arcade stuff, and done a pretty good job so far. I think we have like half a dozen games reviewed or something like that, with more coming. And I don't know, I guess the goal is to review them all. I don't know. I'm going to hopefully hit like the stuff that I think people would care about the most or want to know an opinion on the most first. And then I also kind of want to focus on trying to dig up, you know, the quote unquote hidden gem type stuff too, to maybe bring to light some games that people didn't know were good or something like that. So anyway, I feel like everything to do with Apple Arcade should be kind of separate from regular stuff, because if you're not subscribed to Apple Arcade, you can't play these games. So I feel like it's kind of unfair. I've been struggling to figure out what to do with the game of the week too, because I feel like picking an Apple Arcade game for the game of the week is kind of a dick move if you're not a subscriber. It's supposed to be the game that, like, everyone should check out.
How many people do you think are really reading Touch Arcade that like aren't subscribing to Apple Arcade?
That's fair, but I don't know. I feel like it's just weird to intermix the two.
It might be interesting for you to post a story that's just like an embedded straw poll. That's like, or do a Twitter poll or something. Like, hey, or actually you could do it. SurveyMonkey is free up to 1,000 responses. You could do like a multiple choice one, like kind of forks off where it's like, do you read Touch Arcade daily? Yes or no. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Do you subscribe to Apple Arcade? Yes or no. And then you can... I've kind of done that for like the Game Club surveys, because it's kind of it's kind of interesting, because like the way that we structured them, like the leading question is always like, how disappointed would you be if you could no longer play Game Club games anymore? With like the answers being like, I wouldn't care at all, or I would be a little bummed, or I'd be very upset kind of thing. And it's interesting because like the feedback that people have that say they wouldn't care at all is very different from the people that say they'd be extremely upset kind of thing. So
yeah.
That would be kind of interesting to see like how to guide that sort of content, because it wouldn't surprise me if like everyone that really reads Touch Arcade and like, you know, is interested in that sort of stuff, like also doesn't subscribe to Apple Arcade. Like that would seem crazy to me to think that there'd be this large contingent of people that would be really into mobile games, but don't spend $5 a month on like the largest collection.
Yeah. I think it's tricky right now too, because everyone's still in the free 1 month trial. And so, We'll see what happens when it comes time to charge people for this thing. Because right now, there's no reason you shouldn't be checking it out. And so a lot more people, I feel like, are and are talking about it and stuff.
Did you see that story that came out about how if you cancel your Apple Arcade, you immediately lose access? Is that true? I haven't fiddled with that.
I looked into it because, you know, we talked about this before, how you can subscribe to a lot of things and it'll just charge you real quick.
That's how it works with apps, is like if you subscribe to something, you can cancel
right
immediately.
Away. Yeah, so you're basically buying 1 month at a time or 1 week at a time or whatever it is without having to worry about the renewing charge. But Apple Arcade is different. You go into your subscription tab, and if you click on it, it'll be like end your free month trial is how they word it, instead of like, you know, do you want to cancel this subscription? And normally if you do that, it'd be like, okay, well, you can access this until your next billing, which would be a month from now or whatever. No, it's not like that. It's like end the free trial.
It's weird because Apple's like actively like breaking their own rules with the way Apple Arcade works, right?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
What else is new?
Yeah.
So anyway, check out our Apple Arcade reviews. We're going to try and get more of them up in case you're curious. Read about Apple Arcade games. They'll be denoted in the title with Apple Arcade, so you'll know that they're separate from regular games. And I also think it'll be interesting... I think for now what I'm going to do is do a game of the week of a regular release and do a Apple Arcade game of the week just at random. A game I think is cool, just because because I've also noticed in the last couple of weeks the new releases have slowed down, the regular releases. So we do like that new games roundup or whatever. And so what happens if Apple Arcade becomes this wild success, nobody starts releasing games the normal way anymore? Where do we go from there? So I don't know. It's kind of like a weird influx moment. I think I'm just going to be doing twice the work for a while just to kind of cover both aspects of Apple Arcade and regular releases.
Yeah, that's so we'll see. I definitely look into doing a SurveyMonkey thing, though. That might be pretty informative.
Yeah, I might do that. I really feel like everybody right now that's reading Touch Arcade has an Apple Arcade subscription. There's no way.
Although maybe it'd be a better time to like figure out how to do it and then like run the survey like whatever, like a week after everyone's trial runs out.
Yeah.
Be like, are you still subscribing to Apple Arcade kind of thing?
We'll see.
All right. Well, should we drive this bus off the cliff?
Yes. Let's wrap things up. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening to this week's episode. As I failed to mention, as I often do, Touch Arcade is primarily sponsored through our readers and our viewers and our listeners. So if you like what we do, please consider supporting us through Patreon at patreon.com/TouchArcade. Even as little as $1 a month, we'll get you some cool exclusive bonuses, like a video version of this podcast, and some other stuff, and maybe some more stuff in the future if I can ever get around to it. Also, you can support us by doing your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. And in general, just telling people that Touch Arcade exists is a very helpful thing, especially in light of Apple Arcade. If you find people that are interested in this, they're hearing about this Apple Arcade thing on the news or whatever, they don't normally game, point them in our direction, because hopefully we'll be helpful in finding them cool games to play and spend their time with in the shiny new Apple Arcade world.
Oh, yeah.
With that, I think that'll wrap things up. We will see you on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show next week.
See ya.